Springfield's News Talk, FM 104.1 KSGF, and a good Tuesday, friends. Sunny, but only 35 today for a high. In fact, the whole week we're looking at 30s. The timeline has been laid out for the trial. We're there in the Senate, and boring, basically. Long and boring. It's one of these deals most people are just going to wait for the highlights of. And then next week, they will vote, perhaps, on whether or not to call additional witnesses. So, well, I'll just give you a brief breakdown. I'm not going to go too... I mean, there's not, honestly, a whole lot to go into on it. Then, of course, the 22,000, somewhere in that arena, individuals that were out... showing solidarity with one another in Virginia, as well as the solidarity with the Constitution and the Second Amendment, and much to the dismay of so many left-wingers that think, oh, these crazy Second Amendment people, guns, they're showing up with all these guns, perfectly peaceful. And in fact, you would never have even known they were there when they left. There wasn't a bit of litter on the ground. All of these folks, 22,000. When was the last time you went to any event where there were 22,000 people, and when everyone left, there wasn't a bit of trash on the ground? Do you think of any place? We've got Don Luzader this morning. He's got our latest news update.
Good morning. Police say an armed security guard saved lives when he shot and killed a man suspected of fatally shooting a woman and injuring about 15 more people outside of a bar over the weekend in Kansas City. The police chief says the suspect, Jaron Swift, had several weapons when he opened fire just before midnight Sunday outside of the 9 Ultra Lounge. A motive for the shooting remains unclear, and investigators are trying to determine if the victims were targeted or shot at random. Governor Parson is proposing a $3.56 billion in base funding for Missouri's K-12 public schools. Under Parson's requested state budget that begins in July, the amount would fully fund the formula used to finance the state's 518 public school districts. During last week's State of the State address, Parson said about 30% of Missouri's population has a four-year degree from a college or university. He wants to boost school transportation spending by $10 million to an overall $117 million. And Hoover Music officially closed its doors on Monday after 107 years of business in Springfield. The family-owned store announced back in December that they would be closing, the owner thanking the many customers who have supported that store over the years. And that is the latest news.
The KTTS First Alert forecast. It is going to be a sunny day, and it's going to be a cold day with a high of 35. Chance of flurries overnight with a low of 27. Rain, snow mixed throughout the day tomorrow. 35 rain and snow Thursday, 38. It's 16 and mostly cloudy at the KSGF studio. Did that come unplugged over there? Something, the TV went off. I tried to turn it on. Oh, did it? All right, thank you. I like to, you know, just seems amiss if that monitor's not on over there. We are on Facebook Live. That is 1041 Nick Reed. You can watch the show, listen to the show, make comments about the show. It's very, very interactive. Very interactive. The team members of Congress on the Trump impeachment teams, each side, they get their little team put together. This is something Nancy Pelosi was putting off and putting off. And so she cobbled together Adam Schiff, Nadler, you know, the best of the best that the Democrats have to offer the country. For President Trump's side of things, the announcement yesterday, the members of Congress who will defend the president in the impeachment trial in the Senate. Those members of Congress include Georgia Representative Doug Collins, Louisiana Representative Mike Johnson, Ohio Representative Jim Jordan, Arizona Representative Debbie Lesko, North Carolina Representative Mark Meadows, Texas Representative John Ratcliffe, New York Representative Elise Stefanik, and New York Representative Lee Zeldin. These are the folks that will be on the defense. The announcement came after Mitch McConnell introduced the resolution yesterday with specifics on the timeline of the impeachment trial. Very long, very boring for most people. Now, that resolution is going to be voted on today, and by all expectations, it is a resolution that will pass. It is going to give both sides 24 hours to argue their cases over two trial days. Senators will then be given 16 hours for questioning. The schedule would mean 12-hour days of arguments in the Senate, according to Business Insider. The impeachment trial could be over before Trump's scheduled State of the Union address on February 4th. And so the timeline as it's laid out will go, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then it would be early next week, if all things follow the schedule, in which they will vote as to whether or not to allow additional witnesses. Now, this has been the big point of contention, because Democrats want to call witnesses that they wouldn't call over in the House. Now, I want to explain why this is. This is an important component to all of this. The ultimate reason is not an uncommon MO for the Democrats, is to try to create this sense that Republicans are hiding something. It has almost become a default reaction for Democrats to create a scenario in which Republicans, that they feel Republicans will not comply. They'll go, no, we're not going to do that. All for the purpose. They set it up so they can say, oh, look at the Republicans. They're trying to hide something. Why? They're trying to hide something. The Republicans, rightfully so, in the Senate, they're looking over at the House. They're like, listen, this is your case. That was your job. You're the ones that create the case, then you present it to us. You don't come over here and then demand that we do the case, that we create a new case. That's not what we do. In this capacity, we are acting as jurors. We are the ones who receive, you present the case, and then we decide whether or not you made your case, guilty or not guilty. While there are obviously some differences between this sort of trial versus a sort of trial that the average person would be dealing with, you can analogize to a certain degree. And what Democrats are wanting would be the equivalent of you're sitting there on a jury, you're a trial, and the prosecutors that are making their case demand that you, as a jury, go out and find some additional witnesses for them, or they demand that you question these witnesses. No, that's what you do. That was your job. So why didn't they do it? Let's look at Bolton, for example. Bolton is one that they keep really pointing to as, oh, yeah, we want him to testify. We want him to testify. We want him to testify. Bolton of the Trump administration, who at one point had said that he would testify if the court said that he had to. This is over on the House side. Well, then a couple weeks ago, he's like, hey, if I get subpoenaed, I'll come. Now, the argument that Adam Schiff made as to why they did not call some of these witnesses is because it would have taken too long. That going through the courts, going through the system that is set up, the way that it's set up, the same system you and I are expected to adhere to, that it would just take too long. And it just, that wasn't on their timeline. I mean, they openly acknowledged that. It wasn't on their timeline. And since they didn't want to have to wait for the courts, they decided just forget about it. Well, okay, but that's your decision. Now, though, they are calling on the Senate to call these individuals, or to call Bolton, or, you know, some others as well. Well, if they really wanted to hear them that badly, why did they not call them? Why did they not wait? If they're so important, This isn't about calling them. This isn't about hearing what they have to say. This is about creating a scenario in which Republicans say, no, that's your job, and they can scream cover up. See, the purpose of somebody like John Bolton isn't to provide information. The purpose that someone like John Bolton serves in the minds of the Democrats and in their plan is to create an appearance of cover-up. So you don't call him as a witness. Then instead you demand that Republicans do it. And when they don't, you get to say cover-up, 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 cover-up. And so that's what that is all about. Here's the latest traffic this morning. I'm Nick Reed. Streaming live on Facebook, 1041 Nick Reed. The KSGF talk and text line, 447-KSGF. Call in, text in, if you'd like to do so. Oh, actually, looking for a pen, I have to make a note. It is now the Queen City Motors talk and text line. The same good folks. Huh? Did you hear that? Huh?
I did.
Yeah. The same. To write these things down here. Let me write it down. The same good folks that sponsor our Friday Road Show now, sponsoring the KSGF talk and text line. So the Queen City Motors talk and text line. 447-KSGF, if you want to call in, you want to weigh in, feel free to do so. There is a new theory, if you will, that people are floating around regarding this, the impeachment and now the trial over there in the Senate, and that is that this is all a plan to try and win back the Senate, that the Republicans are defending roughly twice as many seats as Democrats are. But not all of them are up for grabs. You're almost even footing here. There are some states that Republicans are defending in the Senate that could be close calls that right now, although we are still very far out, are considered close calls. But Democrats are defending about as many close calls as well. So while Republicans overall are defending twice as many seats, when it comes to the close calls, the coin toss column, if you will, it isn't that far off. And so the upside that Republicans have going for them is that Trump is running for re-election. And as we know, the coattails of Donald Trump are very long and they're very strong. And he's going to be on the ballot. And so that's going to be very, very hopeful for the Democrats or for the Republicans. The Democrats, on the other hand, Warren, Biden, Hillary. There's still people talking about Hillary. I think it's a Netflix documentary. There's some documentary that's coming out about her, So, of course, the timing of it really have people wondering. And listen, you can't dismiss it completely. We are talking about Hillary Clinton here. She's the cat came back the very next day. You know that story, the cat, no matter how far away people tried to get rid of the cat, dump it, it just kept coming back, would not go away. Hillary Clinton is the cat that came back the very next day. And so who knows? But these coattails, they're not long, they're not strong for the Democrats. But part of this reason that this speculation exists is because, once again, people they tend to look for answers in things that don't make sense. And the Democrats' constant push for this doesn't make sense to thinking people because there is no upside for it. And so that's, some people think, well, maybe this is what she's thinking. There is a piece that I think is pretty straightforward, broken down, and simple. We'll get it up at KSGF.com. And it is regarding the impeachment trial and the four legal problems that that House Democrats have to face. And it's written up by Jenna Ellis. She's a constitutional attorney and a senior legal advisor to the Trump 2020 campaign. She's an attorney to President Trump and author of The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution. She's writing out her argument, the problems that Democrats have. And one of them is the substance problem. Writing that the articles don't identify any impeachable offense or even a crime. Article 2, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution clearly and intentionally limits impeachment to instances of, quote, treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. The two articles of impeachment do not allege any conduct that fits within the constitutional definition or even any crime whatsoever. And that's an important point. We think high crimes is just a matter of opinion. The point that's being made here is there is no crime, high, low, otherwise. Obstruction of Congress is a thing they made up. That's made up. They made that up. Obstruction of Congress. There's no crime. If obstructing Congress were a crime, then every president that ever vetoed anything would be impeached because that would be obstructing Congress, preventing Congress from doing what Congress wants to do. A veto is just that when it comes to legislation. These are separate entities within the government. And at times, one is going to be in a position to obstruct the other from doing what it wants to do. Congress obstructs the president anytime the president has any sort of desired legislation, perhaps, and Congress is like, no. Border wall, for example. It would, you know, you think of a scenario in which Donald Trump said, okay, you know what, Nancy Pelosi, let's see, we're going to try her. We're going to have her arrested. And we're going to try her for obstructing the executive. Now, rightfully so, the response to that would be, well, you can't do that. There's no such thing. Yet they have crafted this obstruction of Congress as some sort of high crime. When it is not. The other abuse of power. Well, what does that mean? As Jenna Ellis points out, abuse of power is a vague allegation and not an allegation that is a violation of any specific law. It's been noted that every single president post George Washington has at one point or another been accused of abusing his power as president of the United States. Abuse of power is not an impeachable offense. If it were, then every single president except George Washington would have been impeached or would have fallen under the ability to be impeached. There are three other areas, and I want to share these with you. And like I said, they're pretty straightforward. They're almost elementary, involving the process, the evidence, and so forth. So we'll do that next. The Queen City Motors talk and text line 447 KSGF. I'm Nick Reed. Jenna Ellis arguing the four legal problems House Democrats have to face regarding their impeachment push here. One is the substance problem in that even what they're alleging, the articles themselves, are not any crime, let alone a high crime and a misdemeanor. You are talking about abuse of Congress, which is a made-up thing. It's a made-up theory. And then abuse of power, which every president except George Washington has been accused of. The process problem. House Democrats, of course, violated all precedent and due process while conducting their impeachment inquiry, and their goal was never to ascertain the truth. Certain constitutional protections, including due process, are afforded to every defendant, and the context of an impeachment and a trial is no different legally in terms of constitutional protections. It is not up to the Senate to now try to help the House's flawed and illegal inquiry by entertaining witnesses or curing a defective process. While the punishment for conviction in the context of a presidential impeachment is removal from office, unlike a regular criminal trial where the sentence structure is different, the fact that the penalty is unique for impeachment does not divest or remove any constitutional protections from a sitting president. It is not up to the Senate to now try and help the House fix this flawed inquiry by entertaining the witnesses, by new witnesses, by doing the job that the House, you know, wishes that they had done right. If House Democrats really wanted to ascertain the truth and fact gathering, they should have allowed minority witnesses and the president's legal team to participate during the inquiry and not simply try to meet their internal deadline for impeachment and conduct their inquiry fairly. By the way, when it comes to this calling of witness thing, and how they're, well, we just didn't want to wait, and now it is the Senate's responsibility to do our job for us. There is nothing that says the House can't do it now. This seems to be a point that isn't, you know, it's not being discussed anyhow. We keep talking in retrospect about how, well, they could have. They still can. There's nothing that says that once you pass articles of impeachment, that's it. You can't open another inquiry. Go ahead, open another one. You can call John Bolton. Call any of these other witnesses that you want. There's nothing that is preventing Nancy Pelosi from doing that. So it's not even a matter of, well, golly gee, we made a mistake. There's nothing we can do about it now, except for hope that Republicans in the Senate do what's right and do it for us. You don't need that. You don't need a time machine. Do it today. We're going to get a traffic update. There's two other big points here that I want to share with you that she's written up as the legal hurdles that Democrats are going to have to overcome in this week in dealing with the trial in the Senate regarding impeachment of President Donald Trump. Here's traffic. I'm Nick Reed. Don Luzader with the latest news.
Good morning. A major change to traffic cameras in Springfield may be decided next week. City Council is expected to vote on a project that would allow the city to record footage from those cameras placed at intersections throughout the city. Authorities say that footage would strengthen cases for investigators who are looking into crimes. Governor Parson is proposing $3.56 billion in base funding for Missouri's K-12 public schools under the governor's requested state budget that begins in July. The amount would fully fund the formula used to finance the state's 518 public school districts. During last week's State of the State address, the governor said about 30% of Missouri's population has a four-year degree from a college or university. He says he wants to boost transportation spending by $10 million to an overall $117 million. The governor also calling on lawmakers to expand access to virtual education for high school students and those who are homeschooled. And that is the latest news.
The KTTS First Alert forecast sponsored by St. Clair of the Ozarks Home Improvements. Sunny, 35 for a high today, a chance of flurries overnight with a low of 27. Rain, snow mixed through the day tomorrow, 35. Rain and snow Thursday, 38. Rain and snow early on Friday, a high of 37. It is 16 and cloudy at the KSGF studios. Jenna Ellis has a piece that lays out four arguments that's four areas that's going to make it very difficult from any sort of legal standpoint for Democrats to lay out a case in the Senate against Donald Trump. The first one was the substance problem and the fact that the articles themselves do not allege any high crime and misdemeanor. Abuse of power is a matter of opinion, and it's something that every president since Washington has been accused of. And obstruction of Congress is something they just made up. You know, Congress isn't God. The president does not have to do everything Congress wants. So saying that any time the president doesn't do something that Congress wants, that's an impeachable offense, that's absurd. Secondly, the process problem. The impeachment inquiry was irredeemably flawed. Thirdly, the evidence problem. In the articles, there's no evidence. The evidence in the House record shows President Trump did not condition security assistance or a presidential meeting on announcement of any investigation. Further, witnesses only provided their belief and we saw much of this play out, their interpretation, their speculation, and most were not even directly knowledgeable of the July 25th call. You know, we forget there is actual evidence, and it's the transcript that President Trump released. She goes on to write, the two people who actually were on the call, President Trump and President Zelensky of Ukraine, both have affirmed that there was no pressure or condition. And again, we forget that Trump released the transcript of the call. So we could all see. Article 2 vests all executive authority in the president. This means that the Constitution gives the president sole authority to enforce all executive policy decisions, including foreign policy. While subordinates or Congress may or may not agree with these decisions, it is the president's prerogative. The reason that Trump's legal team continues to refer to, quote, overturning the 2016 election is because the American people voted to elect President Trump, which means we, the voters, selected him to have and exercise the Constitution's presidential executive authority. Four. Now, this one is a little more legalistic. The structure problem. The articles are structurally deficient and can only result in acquittal. So, talking about the two articles themselves. In law, there is a prohibition against a charge that is duplicitous. That is, if it charges two or more acts or offenses in the same count. For example, a complaint against a defendant cannot charge only one count of speeding, but allege that the defendant sped in January and then again in July. Each of those two instances is separate, and the evidence for each speeding allegation would have to be proven on its own. Does that make sense? So in other words, let's say that I am, let's use the speeding analogy here. This is not in a political context. And I get a summons because of allegations that I was speeding. But I'm accused of just speeding. And the accusations are, well, I did it in January, I did it in February, and I did it in July. Now, the reason that you cannot have one complaint for more than one different instance is because when the people, the jury, are making the decision as to guilt or innocence, you could have some jurors believe, well, I think that he did speed in January, while others say, I think that he did in February, and the others saying, I think he did in whatever other month I gave as the example. And so everything is spread out, and you have this mixture of decisions that's being made, so you may not have a full jury of individuals that believe you to be guilty on any one instance, but some over here, some over there, and so you have to have one complaint for every single accusation that occurs. So in other words, one would get, if one is accused of speeding on three different occasions, you would have three different complaints made against you, not one. And the reasons being, as she writes, otherwise half the jury might be convinced of the evidence for the January speeding vote for the conviction, the other half of the June instance of speeding. Thus, the jury is not truly unanimous in its verdict. Tried separately, the defendant would be acquitted of both alleged speeding instances. Here, House Democrats are charging multiple different acts as possible grounds for conviction. And Constitution requires two-thirds of Senate present to agree on the specific basis for conviction. So a vote from the Senate on the articles as written cannot ensure that a two-thirds majority agreed on one particular ground for conviction. You may have seen even, the past articles of impeachment for President Johnson and President Bill Clinton were much, much, much higher. I think Clinton had 12 and Johnson had many more than that. And that's because every single allegation that of an impeachable offense was listed. Instead of just having this sort of broad, well, abuse of power, here's a whole bunch of stuff that he did. And the argument, the legal problem here is the duplicity of the fact that if you list six different things that you're alleging and they all fall under abuse of power, which again isn't a crime in and of itself, you cannot ever really have, unless you are going to say that the guilty plea is dependent on every single one of those counts being determined as a guilt by 67 of the jurors, which would be two-thirds of the Senate, you cannot have any sort of clarity in the finding, which is why we don't do it that way in this country. So these are just four very basic fundamental reasons. Some of them fall under the category of common sense, while some involve a little more legalities. But they're all just very basic fundamental reasons why this entire case that's been presented, it's a joke. It's a joke in a legal context. It's a joke in a political context. And all week long, there is going to be a lot of yammering about it. It is not going to be, at least from the prosecutor's standpoint, that being the Democrats, the sort of trial that you're accustomed to seeing on television in a non-political context, where here is the specific allegation, this is where it is, you know, in law, a crime, and this is the crime that we believe that the individual committed, and here's the evidence put forth that the individual committed this crime. None of those elements exist. The accusation, there is no criminal code, there is no high crime and misdemeanor, there's no bribery, there's no treason. You notice none of those things are introduced. The evidence doesn't exist. None of the elements. And so instead you're going to have a lot of vagaries. You're going to hear the Democrats talk a lot about, you know, use buzzwords that they think resonate with people like founders and obstruction, but they're not in any way, shape, or form going to have any legitimate case that's presented this week. Springfield's News Talk FM, 104.1 KSGF. Nancy Pelosi has made a point, I think on more than one occasion, that, well, President Trump, he's been impeached forever. So what? Who cares? Let me ask you this. Outside of the fact that it comes up now because of the discussion of impeachment, when people think about former President Bill Clinton, is the very first thought that comes into people's mind, oh, he was impeached? Is that the first thing that comes to people's mind? Now, like I said, we hear it now more often referenced because of compare and contrast to the way that these, you know, articles are written up and how the Congress has proceeded. But prior to this discussion of impeachment, whenever Bill Clinton in hiding, not attending events, was Bill Clinton not been out there doing fundraising? Is every time he comes up in the news, they say former President Bill Clinton, who was impeached? No. They keep acting as if this is just, this is the end. I mean, they've got to hang their hat on something. I get that. I understand that. But this is nothing. Particularly now. Once upon a time it was, but they have turned it into such a farce. So Nancy Pelosi out there, well, he's impeached forever. So what? Donald Trump is the sort of guy that he, I believe, sees something like this as just another battle scar. And the more battle scar, this is how different people view things. You know, some people view battle scars as, you know, oh, this was a horrible time in my life. I can't believe this happened. And then there are the few, and I believe Donald Trump is this way, that they're almost a badge of honor. Like, yeah, I got this one here because of this, and I got this one here because of that. Donald Trump, I imagine, sees this battle scar as the one that he got because he wouldn't play the game, because he would not give in to the swamp, because he actually did what it is that he said that he was going to do, that he was not working on behalf of all the lobbyists, not working on behalf of the system, but instead for what he, you know, he got elected to do, what he said he was going to do. And the fact that they're doing this is proof that he's doing his job. And he's going to continue to do it. And there's a very, very, very good chance he's going to get reelected. And so while Nancy Pelosi loves to rationalize this as well, he's always going to be impeached. Ha, ha, ha. I don't know that he doesn't see it as an example of yet another thing that he has overcome. And he kind of likes that. All right, a couple of, I don't know how many of you have dealt with this. I know I did immediately. Your property tax assessment. If you aren't aware, filing your property tax assessment list online may not be something that you're able to do. Oh, here I am, responsible taxpayer, looking to pay the government for the privilege of owning my own property, and so I have to make sure that I turn over a list of my things to the government so that they can charge me for having them. It's got freedom written all over it and liberty written all over it. And so you get these little postcard dillies, and it's like, don't forget, otherwise we'll take some of your money away from you if you don't give us a list of property you have so we can charge you for it come the end of the year. Here, by the way, go online and do it. So I go online. Not working. So the newsletter has a story. Software change is to blame for Greene County property assessment tool being down. Now, these things happen, right? We all work somewhere where there's a glitch. This happens, that happens. The attitude. And I don't mean of the Greene County assessor specifically, but just the whole attitude of this, to me, screams government. And that's like, well, I don't know if it'll be fixed in time. You know, for you to be able to go online before you get penalized. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. We'll let you know. It just screams government. So the Greene County assessor, Rick Kessinger, said that a software change is to blame, saying we discovered a couple of things we wanted our vendor to fix for us. We're not going to put out a defective product. Well, it seems like you did. So defective, it's not working. We're not going to put out a defective product and then have people have problems while they're trying to file. Well, again, that's exactly what happened. We're waiting until we have a product that we believe is 100%. Kessinger said that people who receive postcards notifying them to list their property online can instead print out a physical list at the assessor's website. They can then mail it in or drop it off at the assessor's office at the historic Greene County Courthouse, 940 Boonville Avenue, room 37. Kessinger said if people want to get a list pre-printed with the property they claimed last year, they can email the assessor's office or do a website contact and one of his staff will send it that way. People can wait and see if the online filing systems comes back on before the March 1st deadline, though Kessinger said he doesn't know when the software will be back online. But March 1st? You got like a month and a half. Once it's back online, he said that the county will let people know via social media. Quote, everything else is normal. It's just one of those things that you get with these new systems. Now, like I said, this is just to me, this screams the difference between private sector and government. Private sector has this sort of massive meltdown where like you're the one thing that you have to do, the portal in which you do it is not working. Let's say it's a credit card company. and something happens with the system that you go and you make your credit card payment online and it goes down, do you think the credit card company will be like, well, 6-7 weeks, we don't really know if it'll be fixed by then. In the meantime, you can email us and request us the amount that you owe, and then you can mail it in or drop it by. But no, I mean, they'd have that thing fixed in hours, if that. Like, we are on this thing. But somehow with government, March 1st, we'll let you know. We don't really know. So very, very typical. So here's just a question for you to ponder here. The software change to blame for Greene County property assessment tool being down, and this is where you go online. You know, they send you a postcard, and they say, okay, here, go online and list for us all of the property you own so we can charge you for it later. For owning it, and it's down in like oopsie daisies. Well, we're doing a software upgrade. It kind of caused a glitch. Maybe it'll be fixed by the deadline. We don't know. I wonder what would happen if things were reversed, and because there's a penalty, there's a financial penalty if you don't do this in time. If I didn't send mine in on time. Didn't go online and do it in time. If their end was working, but I was like, you know what? I just changed from Windows whatever to whatever, and you know, the upgrade, it caused a glitch, and it didn't go through. But you know what? Maybe 6-7 weeks from now, I'm gonna take it in. I'm gonna have somebody look at it. My brother-in-law is good with that sort of stuff. Once I get it, I'll let you know, and I'll send it to your way. Do you think they'd say, oh yeah, okay, sure, we'll waive that penalty? News in 60 seconds. I'm Nick Reed.